Commerce Committee. Time is 1:40. March 22nd, 1985. Members present, Representative Navarro, Representative Davis, Representative Boucher, Representative Collins, Representative Hanley, Representative Kopanen. Ask at this time if everyone who wishes to testify today is signed in. Also like to mention for the record that House Bill 63 relating to the plumbing code, which is on today's calendar, will be held over, and I'll let you know when it's scheduled to be heard again. Bills we have before us today, House Bill 90 and House Bill 130, and we'll take up House Bill 130. First, an act relating to educational employees' collective bargaining agreements and providing for an effective date. Some language that was provided as amendments to House Bill 130, which I ask the committee members to provide for us, those who are interested. Also, Bob Green, from the Alaska Association of School Boards, has provided language, and that is also included in your files. Virtually the same as the amendment that was offered by Representative Hanley. They're exactly the same.
Where's your kind of different one?
We have two amendments by Representative Hanley.
Right. One that relates to what the arbiter will consider.
And where does this go?
What's this one
here?
Essentially, those are identical.
There's a couple different words, but.
Yeah, okay. Well, I move for the adoption of. What are we calling this particular amendment number one?
We'll call this one amendment number one.
Yeah, amendment number one by Representative Hanley.
Are there any objections?
Specifically.
I'd like to ask Mr. Green, do you have a copy of that amendment?
Yes.
Also, Ms. Pierce? Okay, the only person I have listed to testify today is Bob Green, and I'm wondering if you'd like to, you can join us at the table. Also, Ms. Pierce, if you'd like to join us at the table.
You get the big chair today.
Do you have any staff room? Do you make a copy, or does everybody have a copy?
I think everyone has a copy.
Do you have a staff room?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, regarding the amendment number one, I think that would be a beneficial addition to the bill, and I own up to not being exactly clear on details of arbitration under state statute, but I believe there is a what's called the Uniform Arbitration Act, which I'll just mention and say that you might want to consider that also as part of the approach to making sure that the arbitrator stays within the confines of the directions given to the arbitrator. And essentially what I think that particular statute does is give judicial relief, or makes a provision for judicial relief in case, say, the arbitrator, these are the directions to the arbitrator, in case something doesn't happen, there's a vehicle by which the relief can be obtained. I've talked about 2 minutes more than what I really understand in that area.
Thank you, Mr. Green. There is an amendment that's been offered by Representative Copeland that would allow for judicial review. And I think that, I don't know if you have a copy of it or not, but...
number two.
Anyhow,
this is the one that we're calling number one.
Okay. Analysis, yes. Okay. Are there any objections to amendment number one? No objections. And number one is adopted.
I would offer this amendment on judicial review is under two. It would be added on page 6, line 23 of the new section E, after D.
Page 6, line 23.
After line 23.
Oh,
dear.
Apparently, finance has changed their order of business.
Are there questions or objections to amendment number two?
Essentially drawn from the Connecticut statutes.
Representative Davis?
I was going to ask the same question. I was just going to ask where it came from, but how does it work in other states?
I did some work in Connecticut when I was at Harvard, and I remember that the arbitration statute there was supported by both the Connecticut School Boards Association and the Connecticut Education Association. So I requested copies of the statute. Took some of the provisions that seemed to meet some of the objections of the school board. And that's why President Handley's amendment number one and my amendment number one look pretty similar. And this one is to clarify the judicial review language.
How was this the amendment?
It's the amendment.
Yes. No, it's put it on the bottom.
Page 6, line 23.
Okay.
Are there any objections to amendment number two? Not, the motion is adopted. The amendment is adopted. Which one do I have copies of?
I think I have the analysis number.
Do you have the amendment?
I don't have my own number.
we'll have a pretty bad evening. We can get copies of the minutes.
I don't have a copy.
Need copies of number three, and this one here.
Yeah, I have a copy of him.
Somebody missing one, they don't have, they get a copy of this one.
Oh, there's extra one here.
Oh, I copied my language out of about three old bills, but they must have come from, you got yours out of the Connecticut. Oh, they must have come from the old bills from there.
Actually, I think a number.
It was in 502 last year.
Just one, yeah, I think a lot of them, they have same kind of names, yeah.
I'm at number three.
I have an amendment to the amendment, and that's to strike on wages, hours, and other mutually agreed upon conditions of employment.
Okay. Alice?
Mr. Chairman, I just, maybe to speak briefly to the amendment.
Yeah, I'm not sure the procedure on this.
Yeah, you're, that's fine.
I think you object to the amendment, or?
No, I'm amendment to the amendment. We vote on the amendment to the amendment. You can rule either whether that carries the amendment or whatever, either choice.
And you do it.
Representative Hanlon?
And I have been made aware of concern on this language, and I did agree to think about it. I've thought about it briefly, that, you know, I think that some of the concern raised that it might open this up into something that would require litigation. I'm not sure that I agree with that completely at this time, so I guess it would be, my preference, you know, after thinking about it, that would stay in. I guess I don't find it inconceivable that there could be mutually agreed upon conditions of employment. That seems to be the controversy, and I think it, I think that language, I guess I don't at this time interpret it as being inflammatory, so.
Representative Davis?
I guess I have a question on that. First of all, I think I am in support of the amendment, but the thing that I don't understand is the mutually agreed conditions on employment. It seems like that would take it back to say, well, these are the things that we're going to agree to discuss. And, so to me, it seems, I don't know if this is, maybe you can tell me if this is related to the Supreme Court decision, which basically told them what things are under arbitration, what things aren't. This would sort of open that up and say, no, you things that are, that can, are subject to negotiations are only things that we mutually agree on. That's why I think this sort of, that's why I think this appears to be a bit of a monkey wrench to me. But.
Representative Hanlon?
Just, you know, my only response would be that perhaps the mutually agreed upon, agreed conditions of employment could be listed as those specified in the Kenai Agreement, if that is agreeable to both parties. If they agree that maybe there's something that is listed there that shouldn't be agreed, or if maybe they see something that the Kenai, you know, it could go both ways. You know, there could be something that they want to eliminate and say, no, we're not going to bargain on that. Or maybe a group of teachers could say, well, we would really like to negotiate on class sizes, even though Kenai says we can't. If they mutually agreed that yes, they would agree on class size, that was appropriate, then I guess that could be a mutually agreed upon condition of employment. If they agreed that something that says you're not going to, you know, that's on the other side, if there's something that says, now this is something that is bargainable, and maybe the school board says we would prefer that this particular item not be bargainable. And if they mutually agree that that's not going to be bargainable, even though it isn't listed in Kenai, or they could simply say, we will use the Kenai decision is what we agree on. I guess that's the way I would say it.
Representative Copeland.
Yes, I think that the reason I'm moving to strike it is to, we're talking about the process of negotiation, and this assumes a prior negotiation, because it then, in putting this in, says you have to negotiate to agree on what you're going to negotiate about. And obviously any agreement they're going to come to are mutually agreed upon conditions of employment. So to, you know, presuppose that before negotiations take place confuses the matter, I think. That was just an alternative possibility. And
that.
Representative Collins.
Well, I guess in a way that might be redundant, because in Section A, it does say, shall negotiate in good faith on matters pertaining to employment and the fulfillment of professional duties. So that's another definition in terms of what they're going to negotiate about. So if you left that in on wages, hours, and other mutually agreed conditions of employment, it would seem to me you'd have to put it in on the top, because you've already identified what they're going to be negotiating, and this adds to that, or changes the meaning.
Mr. Chairman, one of the charges that we were given when we left, and I think I spent about 8 hours going down through all of them to find out what was negotiable and what wasn't negotiable on the thing, and I came out of it knowing less than when I went into it, because the wording was different here, and I think that as much as we would like to maybe sit here a couple of months and really sit down and say, was this acceptable? I think it's built on the Kenai case, in other words. The court tells us to go back and look at right now. I think that I'm a little concerned about the vague language that exists in here. And we've got the Kenai case. I don't know whether you, that's my feeling on it.
Mr. Green.
Some make different.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hate to come in and try to liberalize a binding arbitration bill. I hope my constituents never hear me say this. There are two things wrong in Section B as I read it. One, if I hear Representative Boucher's concern of staying as close to possible as a Kenai decision, then I would say that you need to deal with the four issues that were spoken to in the Kenai decision, and only two of them are here, wages and hours. We need to also probably add time off and fringe benefits. Then your language is consistent with the Kenai decision. And then if you went on to say, and other items that are mutually permissive, essentially, what I'm trying to get at is the permissive area, where both sides agree that additional items are items that are agreed to be bargained, then you would be closer to what the Kenai decision said and what is generally accepted as bargaining, identification of bargaining items. At least you would have the mandatory items and the permissive items, and then, you know, down the road we may hit the prohibited items. But then the reason why that language is in my view a bit restrictive up front is that the last sentence is in conflict with your intent to create a binding arbitration law, where it says, and it's common in a lot of language where they statutes that do not go to binding arbitration, and in language like this it says, however, you know, they can be very vague on what is bargainable, so long as the language is there that says parties are not required to make a concession or arrive at an agreement. I would suspect that if we're looking at language that I think the committee wants to incorporate, would be that you have to have a definition in B which would include wages, hours, time off, and fringe benefits, and other mutually acceptable items, and then drop off the part that does not require them to make a concession or arrive at an agreement, because that's not what you're here to talk about. You're here to talk about binding arbitration law. So I would suggest, you know, I'm not supporting that now, you understand. I don't report to my constituents that I said that. You be quiet. If we dropped that last sentence off and expanded the definition, you'd be somewhere in the area where you have cleaned up the definition as to what is bargainable in the state.
Ms. Pierce?
It's our position that the first section under here talks about the substance of what's bargainable, and that language is the language that has been used by the Supreme Court in arriving at the Kenai decision. So I guess I would urge the support of the amendment to the amendment to take out any further refinement or definition, because I think that opens up lots of room for dispute about what it means and how it modifies A about As far as the last sentence is concerned, if the inclination is to take the language out, that would sure be okay with us. But it does appear in statutes with binding arbitration. For example, that language is in the Connecticut language. And I think that one way to interpret it is that in that process of bargaining back and forth across the table and negotiating, there's nothing in that process that requires the making of a concession or coming to agreement. But when you enter into the resolution stage of things, it may be that one last best offer may be no concession or no item on that particular subject on the part of one party, and the other party may have an item that they're proposing. So I don't think it's, and the arbitrator would choose either the no position or the language that would talk about that particular subject. So I don't think it's entirely incompatible with binding arbitration. If the inclination is to take it out, that's okay.
Representative Davis? I'd say let's just vote on it. I don't think it's already, we've got the Kenai decision spelling out basically what's negotiable and what isn't. So, why sort of try to narrow it here when it's already pretty well spelled out, unless we want to broaden it to make sure to say to include everything in the Kenai, and that doesn't include some things that are probably bargained for anyway. So I vote on it and let's see whether we have the votes or not to take it out or to leave it in.
Okay. My understanding, and this is from Connecticut statute, is that right?
It's very similar to the language we had in previous bills.
Representative Boucher?
Could we, so it was no misunderstanding, I hear the amendment on the amendment.
Yeah, the amendment is, here I'll...
Just try to meet this.
I want to know from where to where.
On wages to employment.
On wages, hours, and other mutually agreed to, okay.
To apply the prior agreement.
Yes.
Is there any other comments or questions regarding the amendment to the amendment? If not, the question is, shall we amend the amendment to reflect the changes? Those in favor? Opposed? Opposed? We have before us amendment number 3 as amended. Representative Davis.
Yeah, I've got a question on it, and the question is, why have we expanded this or changed this from the original section 2, negotiation between school boards and employees versus negotiation with employees? Is there any reason why that? Just basically, Allison asking why are we putting this amendment in?
I think during some of the discussion here, I said that I talked about good faith bargaining or something, and there was some discussion about a definition of what is bargaining in good faith. So I think this amendment was an attempt to perhaps include some language that would define what bargaining in good faith, what constitutes bargaining in good faith. So that's what that language is intended to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question?
Any objections to the amendment number 3? Not amendment number 3 is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, if it's in order, I'd like to, unless there's further discussion, I'd like to move it out of committee as amended with individual recommendations.
And yes, committee substitute for House.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 130
first.
As amended.
Well, it'll be just as.
Yes, okay.
Okay.
I'll make sure.
Okay.
I would like to, just for the purposes of discussion, I might just be opening up a can of worms, bring up the amendments that were offered by Mr. Green.
Of governmental operations as part of proposed section 13. I think that there's continual wrangling between municipal government and school boards. I can imagine them coming out with the school board intruding on governmental operations.
What are you referring to, sir?
On the second page, item number
four.
Maintain the efficiency of governmental operations. I mean, what I mean is, I think if we adopt the amendments, we'd have to refine them in such a way that they wouldn't create other problems that are entirely outside of the scope.
My apologies to the committee. I missed that. This is a copy, or the text is essentially from the Iowa statute, which is a Public Employment Relations Act that covers all public employees. And I thought I had gone through and caught and made all the pertinent changes to make it only apply to school districts. So that should say school district operations instead of governmental. I think I indicated to the chairman in submitting this that there was minor modifications to the wording to convert a complete Public Employees Act to just
related to
school districts, but I missed that one.
Representative Hanlon.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would like to have Mr. Green. I know we had talked before about advantages of including what employee rights and employer rights. And I guess I would like to have maybe his thought on why it might be helpful, and maybe then Ms. Pierce's idea of why it might not be.
Okay, we don't have the amendments before us, but I'm just going to kind of make this like third reading on the floor. Oh. We'll be a little informal so we can discuss. Mr. Green?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm mainly concerned about employer rights, which is mainly deciding, or we're back to that issue of what is negotiable. We're setting some limits on things that the employer has the unilateral right to decide. This is going to become increasingly important as bargaining becomes tighter in the state, and bargaining will become tighter in the state as revenues decline. And it's, again, it's nothing more than an effort to set the ground rules on an employer rights, on what is bargainable. In just about every statute, there is an employee rights section, and we have a vested interest in what is in that section also, at least to the extent that the employee has the right to participate or not to participate in labor organizations. We don't have the tremendous interest on the employee rights side because we are well aware that NEA and AFT are fully capable of handling those areas, with the exception of that one. And that, I think, can be massaged enough to be tempered somewhat. we're only interested in making sure that people have the right to go to work without having to join a union in order to do so. However, in fairness, we feel that there should be, that should become an issue, that there should be a right of the labor organization for compensation for services provided. In essence, that boils down to, call it an agency fee or whatever you want it, but it should be accurately computed as to, according to the cost of providing those services. And those services are generally the negotiations process and management of the contract. We don't believe that teachers should be compelled to pay a complete the equivalency of dues to join labor organizations, because those monies quite frequently are used to further political causes that may or may not be the dues of the teachers. We think that that's something that the teachers should have a right to decide for themselves. However, collective bargaining does cost money, and teachers that benefit from that should pay those things. So that's the employees' rights side of the thing that we're mainly interested in. The other things that we accept the fact that they should have the right to organize and bargain collectively and do all the other things that are listed there. The employer rights side is primarily the things that we would like to be able to do unilaterally outside the realm of collective bargaining.
Ms. Pierce?
Yes. We have the discussion amongst the committee members, and also when I have spoken, I've urged that you maintain language that does not undo Kenai. This language will undo Kenai, and I can illustrate why that's true. If you have here, it says, in addition to the powers and duties established by law, the school board has the exclusive power and duty to, and then it says hire, promote, demote, transfer, assign, retain employees, and that's just an example. And if you notice on Kenai, under those items which are negotiable, it is listed: teacher transfer, teacher retention, reduction in staff, teacher contracts, etc. If we were to examine the negotiated agreements of the 53 districts around the state, almost every single one of them would have a transfer provision that has been bargained between the parties. I'm not saying that this language, the exclusive power and duty to hire, promote, transfer, assign, etc., would mean that the school district and the teachers association would no longer be able to negotiate a transfer provision, because usually those provisions focus on procedures rather than, you know, whether or not the school district has the right to do it. But what I am saying is that after Kenai, we've not litigated about what it means that teachers bargain, that the transfer provision, for an example, is a negotiable item. We've not had any litigation. Because of this language, we would have more litigation, because they would be trying to find out what it means that they have exclusive right to transfer. Does it mean that we can no longer bargain procedures? That would be tested. And we would be right in there trying to do what we could to preserve as much of what was defined as negotiable. They would be trying to narrow as much as they could what is defined as negotiable. And I guess what I'm saying is that it would just invite a lot of litigation. And then I want to briefly address the point about the fees, the agency fee, or the fee that is currently a negotiable item in Alaska. There are five districts who have in the past negotiated an agency fee, and I believe it's been equivalent to the dues with a provision for conscientious objection if a person's religion prohibits the payment of such a fee. Those provisions have been included. And also, there is a political rebate, so that any money that the association spends in any kind of political activity is rebated to the employee who is an agency fee paying member. And although Bob indicated that, I thought that you were saying that you know, you weren't necessarily opposed to the bargaining agent imposing a fee. You didn't want to compel the payment of a fee equivalent to the dues, etc. Well, that's a negotiable item, and it's part of the negotiation. negotiation. But number four would, in fact, the language of number four seems to me very clear. The employee has the right to refuse to join or participate in activities of employee organization, including the payment of dues, fees, or assessments, or tax fees of any type. And that would mean that an agency fee provision is no longer negotiable with the state. As I say, there are four districts now, I believe, currently with an agency fee provision that has been negotiated. That means it's been mutually agreed to by the employer. And this would restrict then bargaining agent's ability to negotiate fees for a person who nevertheless needs the benefits of the bargaining agent. So I think that this language, I urge you not to accept it. I think that it undoes Kenai and it will invite, be an invitation to exploring the depths of Pandora's box.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that I've addressed in the past is the agency, this employee, the employee's agency, or the agency that will be helping employees to determine which bargaining unit is appropriate. This particular bill has been expanded to include not only teachers but educational employees. So that in other bills and going back has included language that indicates that an employee has the right to refuse to participate. So I, at this time, I would like to move the employee rights section of the amendment, which is listed as C on the front page.
This is number five. No, number four.
Number four.
Objections?
Objection.
Representative Kopner?
Yes, sir. I think that yes.
Both of these sections complicate the act, and I would like to see at least a year or so's experience in before so we see how the bill works in practice before complicating it further. That's even assuming that it passes. I think that these two sections add in a lot of other complications which will which we can't presuppose ahead of time. And I would feel very uncomfortable adding them to the bill at this time. I know that although there are some 35 states that have statutes governing much of the same matter we're talking about, only 17 of them have management rights sections. I think that it is possible to function without the section, at least if we find out where we're going.
Mr. Chairman, I was talking specifically about employee rights, and I, if I remember correctly, in this particular bill, there is nothing that says that any employee can refuse to join or participate. I would be willing to amend this particular section to delete, including the payment of dues, fees, or assessments, if that would make that language. But I think that there's nothing else in that language that is controversial. It simply says that the employee can organize, they can negotiate, they can determine a collective bargaining unit, and they can refuse to join and participate.
I'm not sure. Where's it at right now? I mean, they don't have to join now, right?
It's a negotiable item, and there's no place where a member is required to join. But there is a requirement in four of the districts, I believe, for a fee to be paid to the collective bargaining agent.
Representative Copeland.
Yes, there are a number of court cases in Alaska and also decisions of the Human Rights Commission. There are people, members of a particular church and a religious group, who may object to joining any particular organization, and the courts have ruled that they can be excluded, but they have to pay an equivalent fee so that they have no unfair economic advantage. And in a couple of cases, that fee is paid to partially to the organization, in the case of a union, for the negotiating service, and the balance of the fee, which would be other considerations, is paid to a charity, I believe, but in the other cases, it's paid directly. But anyway, the fact that we have a court history, I think, would make it highly unlikely that they could ever negotiate an agreement where everybody has to join. But at least four cases people have a legitimate reason for not joining.
Ms. Pierce?
Well, just again, for perspective too, I think that in those instances where classified employees are organized and have been bargaining in the district, in many of those instances, an agency fee has been negotiated, again, with the provisions for people with religious objections. Again, it's not a requirement for membership, it's a fee for the bargaining unit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one more comment, that we are addressing not only, well, you know, talking not only about teachers, but other employees of this particular bill who have never been organized before. So I think that's probably why I feel it's more important to include the language. If the other members of the group would entertain or consider the amendment, I would be willing to amend the amendment after hearing some discussion to exclude, including the payment of dues.
The motion is before us.
For the amendment.
Right.
And I would just...
You'd like to amend the amendment? Or does that...
I guess I would...
You can't make any deals here.
Yeah, I was waiting for discussion. I don't know if anybody... You know, I think I heard Representative Copeland's thoughts. I was curious as to whether other members thought that this language was inflammatory, considering that we're talking about educational employees who have never been parts of bargaining groups before. We're saying that they have the right to organize, they have the right to negotiate, engage in activities for the purposes of bargaining, or refuse to join or participate in the activities of employee organizations.
Objections?
I'm going to maintain my objection just because I haven't even thought about it before right now.
Yeah.
But I just don't know how bargaining units work, frankly, Allison, and what kind of employee rights we have and what we don't have. The first three, I mean, I have, the first three have, I don't have much problem with as far as that is, makes sense. But the last one, I just don't know if that's going to restrict the organization or for them to organize.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Representative Collins?
I'll be right back.
According to Ms. Pierce, this is already done. So it wouldn't change anything by including this with the deletion. It would just be a restatement of what actually exists. Is that correct? Well, I would be concerned about the language participate, because I think that would be subject to dispute about what participate meant.
Then that could be spelled out to say something to the effect that except for the payment of a fee that would be result from the actual cost of negotiations and contract administration or contract management.
And then we would have a dispute about what, in fact, were actual costs. The status quo is, for example, and Representative Hanley, you're absolutely right that you need to be aware of the classified employees and not the people who are not certificated who by this bill will gain their statutory right to bargain. Right now, for example, the Classified Employees Association, the Classified Personnel Organization of Fairbanks, has been organized for a number of years. They have bargained. They are very much in favor of the statutory right to bargain. And they have had an agency fee in that organization, I'd say for the last 8 years, for as long as I can remember, that has been those members, the people who are classified employees in Fairbanks are required to pay a fee to the bargaining agent. That's something that was negotiated probably 8 or 9 years ago, and it's just simply not a controversial item. It's something that was bargained. I think that I don't know about the situation in Anchorage, whether Totem, which is the Totem organization for the classified employees of Anchorage, I think that includes the secretarial staff in Anchorage, is an agency fee organization. It's something that they have mutually agreed to and bargained. In general, the agency fee is something that is desired by the collective bargaining agent, it's usually not so much of a problem for management, except insofar as if it can be used as a bargaining chip across the table. Management generally doesn't care whether or not the organization is supported by all of the people who benefit from the organization.
Representative Hanley.
I guess, you know, in this discussion and hearing about agency fees, you know, it makes me think that maybe we should restrict the whole thing to back to certificated if we're going to get into agency fees for everybody in the groups. But I think probably where at a stalemate on the discussion, I would move the amendment.
Amendment is before us. Those in favor of the amendment? Those opposed? And it doesn't carry. The chair would entertain a motion to. Maybe we should have a brief at ease. I'm sure.
If you entertain a motion, move this out of committee.
Well, what I would like to do is move it out as a committee substitute, and we'll incorporate these into a committee substitute before we pass it on. I can do that, can I?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it's just going to be too bulky. For the next committee. We already adopted the committee substitute that the Department of Law was at. Department of Law.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think we did it.
Yeah, we did.
So now we just have to move these amendments. I mean, we already moved the amendments, and now we just have to have a committee substitute.
As amended.
As amended. But it'll be a committee substitute. We just move it out as a committee substitute with the amendments.
Okay. Will you accept a motion for that, Mr. Chairman?
Well, I will accept the motion.
Go for it, Greg.
Yeah, I'm either. With individual recommendation.
Okay, the motion is to move committee substitute with the amendments out with individual recommendations. Are there objections? So moved.
Are we through this?
I'm going to compliment.
Really. Can we off the record? Can we have brief at ease?
I'd like to bring that up and move it on to the next committee of referral, which is the HESC committee. That relates, it's an act relating labor relations between school boards and other public employers. It adds the classified employees to the CARA.
Mr. Chairman, I was just trying to remember, did Representative Kopanen indicate that if 130 included classified employees, that he would like House Bill 90 held in committee? Did he want to? No?
I guess it doesn't matter. We can hold it over till Monday.
Well, let's find out.
Well, he's not here.
I'll go get him. Excuse me, sir. May I?
Neil's in finance.
Oh, he is?
Yes.
I don't know. I thought it was a backup bill, but I'm not sure in case we didn't include them in 130.
Yeah, well, I think he's concerned that 90. 130, if it doesn't get through, we'd have 90 in the rules.
Oh, he wants it in the rules.
On which one?
On 90. There is being in it, but it is. It's not Nilo's request. No, that's this one.
I'll give it at red 10. I think I'll send it.
It's a letter. He thought that this one out was inflated, so. Because the fiscal note, so the committee, among other things, would want to decide what they want to vote this as a committee fiscal note, which is acceptable, rather than accepting the department's fiscal note.
Okay. Is he coming down here?
He's up in finance.
Okay.
Do you need him? I mean, I can go see him. Did
you
go up there, or I can...
Do you know if he wants to move it?
Yeah. We'll find out. He had evidently expressed a desire.
House Bill 90. I think he wanted it to go to rules.
That's what I thought, too.
That's what he said all along, and I don't think that's changed.
There's a complication on the fiscal note.
Okay, we'll discuss that.
Yeah, I like that.
On House Bill 90, we have a letter from the Department of Labor in regard to Neela's request, Representative Copeland's request for a revised discount. The original fiscal note was for 248.5 $248,500, and Nilo asked if they could send us a revised one. Mr. McCullis, would you like to speak on that, or?
Yes, just briefly, Representative Miller. Here, we just don't want to have my file out. I just got back in town early this morning, so I haven't had a chance to.
I could maybe explain it for them. It's basically, Representative Kopanen asked that the department submit a fiscal note that would reflect only hiring half the staff that they had requested with their fiscal note, because he figured that they could do it with half. They didn't send a fiscal note. They sent a letter, though, that would reflect those changes. We have the choice of sending it out with the fiscal note, that the original fiscal note, and then letting finance handle that part, or we could send it out with, we could adopt this as the committee fiscal note and send it with this, or we could send it with the original fiscal note and then send this letter as a recommendation, which is that they consider it when they consider the bill.
Representative Navarre, it's the department's position that it would be impossible for us to operate that type of a program with the staffing levels that Mr. Kopanen recommends in this particular request for a revised fiscal note. This was the reason that the commissioner's office submitted the letter rather than a revised fiscal note.
Right.
So it's our experience that this type of an activity could not, in any way, shape, or form, be done with a half a position. It's strictly impossible. Give an example. We recently had a peer action up in Fairbanks concerning the city of Fairbanks involving 253 employees. This was a very time-consuming and costly situation. It was probably the size of about a medium school district. This required 1,252 man hours, involved 9 personnel from my division, and translated into dollar terms, it cost the department $41,000. So it's a very time-consuming and costly act of force, and we would be opposed to anything less than what we had requested in our fiscal.
Thank you, Mr. McCullis. I think the concern is that, and I know that it is an expensive process, but the concern that I've noticed among some other legislators is the fact that our bureaucracy has grown at such an accelerated rate over the last several years that it's time that we considered not adding a new position every time we requested a new put new responsibilities on a department.
Could I respond to that?
Certainly.
When PEER was enacted in 1972, the department received the responsibility for administering the PEER Act involving all political subdivisions in the state. With that responsibility come no additional positions or any financial resources. So we've been able to administer it up until this point because of the fact there was very few municipalities that opted back into PEER. Most recently, however, we've had the city of Fairbanks opt back in under the PEER Act. We're in a process now of having the city of Surt opt back in, and God only knows where it's going to end. We've never had the staff or the resources to handle that type of problem. The case up in Fairbanks is a good indication of what we're confronted with when this does happen. I missed one. The city of Unalaska also opted back in. There's some talk about some of the other cities in the southeast opting back in. We've been able to handle it through myself, Don Wilson and Randy Carr as the Labor Relations Board for the Department of Labor. When we have to take wage and hour investigators away from their primary responsibilities, this creates a real significant impact on our program because we have a very minimum staff to handle the routine wage and hour problems, child labor laws, return transportation, resident hire, preventing wage rate enforcement, just a whole variety of wage and hour matters. So we've not had any staff heretofore to handle this peer activity. And, you know, it's argued that perhaps maybe my involvement in it, doing some of the research and investigation, would be perhaps classified work, so I could get in trouble there perhaps with some of the unions. I'm very much concerned about getting this responsibility without sufficient staff and resources, because I've had a great number of years' experience in labor relations and have worked in national labor relations activity for a number of years, and I can assure you that you can't do it for half a position. It's impossible.
Thank
that's
you.
Where I'm really concerned.
Thank you, Mr. Bill Cullis. I was speaking of our bureaucratic structure in general.
I see.
Okay. Representative Hanlon?
Mr. Chairman, I was just curious. Is that, I don't know, if maybe I have the fiscal note. Does the letter indicate that Representative Proponen was suggesting only half a position? Or was he looking at cutting, I thought I understood you to say cutting the fiscal note in half or something, or,
yeah,
or was it half a position?
That's the revised one. That's the old one. Yeah, under the old one, you were asking for three positions, right?
Yes.
Which was higher than the fiscal note that we did last year, one position.
No, I believe so. She's talking about House Bill 216. That was introduced by Representative Proponen last year. The only difference would be the cost of inflation. Now, as I recall, the fiscal note on House Bill 16 last year was around $247,000. There's not that much of a difference, as I recall.
Well, anyhow, I guess it's my determination that we ought to leave that up to the Finance Committee. This bill does have a finance referral, and with the concurrence of the committee, we will send it out as is and let the Finance Committee make the determination on whether the positions are justified. Are there any objections to that, Representative Hanlon?
I just want my objection noted.
We'll move that up.
We will also send the copy of the letter, which was our request to have the positions cut down for their Representative Collins.
I mean, it's kind of curious in that we do have, you know, a fiscal note here that's zero, dated 2015-85. I'm wondering what.
That's from the Department of Education. No finance on back to there.
With that, the chair would entertain a motion.
I'll move that House Bill 90 be moved out of the committee with individual recommendations.
Are there any objections?
Object.
Okay. There is a motion for us. If there's an objection, would you like to comment, or should we just vote?
My only comment, Mr. Chairman, is I'm not particularly, I think this was a very complex bill, and it was one that was very difficult to understand in reading it. The fact that we have had very little discussion and that these classified employees are included in the other bill makes me think perhaps this is unnecessary. I understand the sponsor's interest in having it, but to pass it out of this committee without any discussion or even really looking very much on this particular bill would be my reason for objecting.
That is a very valid objection, I will admit. However, we did discuss it very fully, I will admit that. The bill does have a further referral to the HES committee. Basically, my understanding is that this includes classified employees into the PARA Act. That's my basic understanding. But now that makes a question with me arises how I mark the sheet when I pass this out. I'll probably put due pass on it because I think they should be included in it, and they haven't been in the past in a collective bargaining agreement. What is the pleasure of the committee?
Move it.
There is a motion on the floor to move this bill to the next committee referral. Those in favor? Those opposed?
I know if this one gets out, this one will just sit in the room.
Oh, yeah.
You gonna make it?
What's the matter, Mike?
It's been a long day, huh?
I'm still catching up.
What are you doing, flaking out here at the table?
I think it's all day. All
three weekends in a row I was out of town, and that really takes a lot out of you.
With that, the meeting is adjourned. The time is 2:50.
I don't know. Hey, Arlo's got in late last night. I thought, gosh, Arlo.